and you've already found someone to replace him." At that exact moment, the curtains were pulled back, and Michelle stepped in. "Sorry, that took longer than I thought. I had to wait for Lonnie to call me back, so I just stayed close to—" She stopped speaking as she spotted her mother. "Hello, Mother. What are you doing out here tonight?" Crunchy, salty, cheesy prosciutto and asparagus rolls. An appetizer. Preheat oven to 450 degrees Fahrenheit, rack in the middle position. 2 sheets of frozen puff pastry dough. I used Pepperidge Farm. 20 slices prosciutto in long, thin strips. 20 spears asparagus, cleaned and trimmed, either fresh or frozen. Parmesan cheese, finely grated. Prepare your baking sheet by either spraying it with Pam or another nonstick cooking spray, or lining it with parchment paper. Hannah's first note, I used a cookie sheet lined with parchment paper. Thaw your frozen puff pastry dough according to package directions. Spread out your thawed dough on a lightly floured surface and roll it out until it's slightly thinner than pie crust dough. With the blade of a sharp knife, cut the sheets into rectangles the same size as the length of your asparagus. Make sure that the rectangles are high enough to wrap around the prosciutto-covered asparagus spear twice. Wrap one slice of prosciutto around an asparagus spear. Roll the prosciutto-covered asparagus spear in the shredded Parmesan cheese. Place one puff pastry rectangle out on a clean surface. Hannah's second note. I used a sheet of wax paper for my clean surface. Spray the inside surface of the rectangle with Pam or another nonstick cooking spray. Place the prosciutto-covered asparagus spear on the bottom of the rectangle. Roll the spear up from the bottom and press down the top of the rectangle slightly so that it will stay in place when you bake it. Place the completed roll on the prepared baking sheet. Repeat until all the asparagus spears are wrapped with prosciutto, rolled in shredded Parmesan cheese, and encased in puff pastry rectangles. When all of your appetizers are on the baking sheet, bake them at 450 degrees Fahrenheit for 10 minutes or until they are golden brown. Serve these delicious appetizers warm. Yield 20 delightful appetizers that will make any party a success. Hannah's third note, Lisa wants to make these appetizers ahead of time and freeze them. She's going to thaw them for 15 minutes on the kitchen counter, spray them with Pam or nonstick baking spray on the outside, and bake them until they are golden brown. I think it will work just fine, but she hasn't tried it yet. Chapter 20. Dolores had apologized profusely for leaping to conclusions, laughed with them about her misinterpretation of the situation, and joined them to enjoy the appetizer. When Doc arrived, she'd left to have dinner with him, and shortly after that their entrees had been served. Once those had been eaten, the busboy had cleared away their dishes, and now they were waiting for the coffee they'd ordered. "Here's your coffee," their waitress announced, coming in with a tray containing coffee cups, cream and sugar, and spoons. Once all three of them had their coffee, she said, "Sally wants me to tell you that she'll be with you in less than 5 minutes, and she's bringing the dessert. It's something she tried today, and she'd like your opinions." "What is it?" Hannah asked. "Almond custard pie with raspberry glaze. The waitstaff always tries out new things, and everyone thought it was delicious."
"I believe you," Hannah told her. "Everything Sally makes is delicious."
When their waitress had left, Norman leaned forward and lowered his voice.
"What do you think Sally has to tell us?"
"I don't know," Hannah admitted. "It could be something about almost anybody. Everyone in Lake Eden comes out here to eat when they want a fancy dinner or it's a special occasion." "People from the neighboring towns come here, too," Michelle added.
"It could be something about the convention," Norman reminded them.
"Somehow, I don't think so, but I guess we'll just have to wait and see," Hannah said, taking a sip of her coffee. Sally arrived at their table within 5 minutes, just as their waitress had promised. She was followed by one of her busboys, who was carrying dessert plates, forks, a bowl of something puffy and white that Hannah guessed was sweetened whipped cream,
and a whole pie cut into 6 pieces. "Thanks for the feedback on my appetizer," Sally said, sliding into the booth and nodding to the busboy to serve their dessert. "How did you like the Piccadilly cheese mini muffins?"
"All three of us loved them," Hannah responded immediately. "They're different than anything I've ever tasted before, and they're delicious. Could I have the recipe?"
"Of course. I'll print it out before you leave."
"And could we have the recipe for the new appetizer, too?" Michelle asked.
"I'll give you both of them," Sally promised. "And once you taste my new pie, you'll want that, too. Both Lauren and Brooke raved about it and asked me how to make it. They're going to serve it to the vendors on the last day of the convention."
Our waitress said it was an almond custard with a raspberry glaze, and she told us that it was delicious, Norman told Sally.
"Yes, it's a smooth, creamy custard. Just wait until you taste it. My grandmother used to make it, and the recipe was in her recipe box. Back then, they didn't have almond butter, and she had to make her own before she could mix up the rest of the pie."
"Did she include a recipe for the almond butter?" Hannah asked, wondering if it was the same as the one she had.
"No, it wasn't included in the pie recipe, and I was too young to remember how she made it. Since Florence carries almond butter in the peanut butter and jelly aisle, I just used that. It worked really well in the custard."
Sally waited until the busboy placed a slice in front of each of them. Then Sally picked up the bowl of sweetened whipped cream and garnished the top of their slices with a generous dollop.
"You can decorate the whipped cream with fresh raspberries if you like. It makes the pie look a little dressier."
She picked up her fork, and the three of them quickly followed suit. When they tasted the pie, smiles spread across everyone's face.
"Well?" Sally asked as they each went for a second bite.
"I'm just not sure, Sally," Norman said, cutting off another much larger bite. "I may have to try another slice to make sure."
"I agree," Michelle told Sally. "It wouldn't be fair to judge it on just one slice."
Sally laughed and turned to Hannah.
"Will you give me an opinion?" she asked.
"Yes. But I want to make sure the custard is consistent, so I'd better have a second piece, too. So far, it's incredibly delicious. I love the texture, and the almond flavor reminds me of marzipan with only one difference."
"What's that?" Sally asked.
"Your pie is more delicious, and I like it a lot better than marzipan, and the raspberry glaze complements the almond flavor perfectly."
"Put it on the dessert menu, Sally. It's definitely a huge winner."
Their waitress brought a second pie, and everyone ate another slice. The busboy arrived with a fresh carafe of coffee, and after he had left, closing the curtains behind him, Sally leaned forward so that she could lower her voice.
"Are you ready to hear what I know about the murder case?" she asked Hannah.
"The three of us are all ears," Hannah told her, letting Sally know that it was fine to share this information with Michelle and Norman.
"PK and Pinky came out here quite a bit," Sally told them. "It was their favorite place to eat. Dot got to know them quite well since they were here so often."
Hannah held up her hand to stop Sally. "Just a minute, Sally. This is important. Do either you or Dot know Pinky's real name?"
"No. I was curious, and I asked Dot. She checked around for me, and she said no one here had ever heard her called anything other than Pinky. Dick doesn't know either. I asked him."
"How about Pinky's last name?" Michelle asked. "Was it ever on a credit card she used?"
Sally shook her head. "PK always paid, so we don't know that either. Let me give you a little background about their relationship."
Hannah drew her murder book out of her purse and found a pen. "Please do," she told Sally.
"Pinky didn't eat red meat, but she loved my chicken and fish entrees. PK always had some kind of red meat, but he always asked Pinky if that was okay. She would tell him that it really didn't bother her to see him eating red meat, and he should order whatever he wanted."
"Did Pinky drink wine with dinner?" Norman asked.
"No, neither one of them drank alcohol, at least not out here. I asked Dick about that, and he said both of them ordered virgin Cuba Libres when they came to the bar. They'd come out here after PK got off work,
sit in the bar with their drinks for a while, and then they'd come into the dining room for dinner.
"Did Pinky ever eat any of Dick's pizza dip?" Michelle asked.
Sally smiled. "Dick told me that Pinky loved it, but she made PK eat off all the pepperoni slices before she'd have any. He also told me that PK used to kid her about how he had to save her from temptation, and then they'd both laugh about it. Dick thought they were a really cute couple, and he congratulated them on their engagement. He was about to offer them a bottle of champagne on the house, but then he remembered that they didn't drink alcohol, so he brought a chilled bottle of sparkling apple juice instead."
"Did you see Pinky or PK after they broke up?" Hannah asked.
"Yes, I saw her, and she was desperately unhappy. It was shortly after the breakup. I could ask Doc to look up the exact date if you want it."
"No, that's okay," Hannah told her, "but please keep it handy. If I need it for any reason, I'll let you know."
"It'll be right there in the monthly reservation books. I keep all of them in a firebox, just in case."
"In case of a murder?" Michelle asked.
"That could be one reason, I guess, but there are others."
"Please tell us."
Norman was clearly curious. "I started keeping the reservation books in case my tax returns were ever audited, and they wanted to know who was working on a particular day. Dot writes the names of everyone's server right under their reservation. It could also be useful if one of my diners is involved in a court case."
"To prove that they showed up for dinner and what time they came in?" Hannah guessed.
"Yes. Anyway, as I said, when Pinky came in alone, she told Dot she missed PK, and she didn't understand why he'd broken off their engagement."
Michelle's mouth dropped open in surprise. "But I thought it was the other way around, and Pinky broke up with him."
"Let's just say it was mutual, and there were bad feelings on both sides. I'm almost positive that there's no way they could have patched it up and gotten back together."
Hannah really didn't want to ask the follow-up question, but this was a murder investigation, and she was obligated to ferret out the truth.
"Do you know the reason they broke up?"
"Oh, yes. Everyone who was in the dining room that night knows. Their breakup was very contentious."
"Did it involve another woman?"
"No, that wasn't it at all."
Hannah had been holding her breath, and she let it out in a soft sigh of relief. She'd been hoping that the words "other woman" or Michelle's name wouldn't come up in their conversation.
"You said everyone who was here knew the reason they broke up?" Hannah followed up again. "Tell us about it."
"Of course. You have the background now. Just remember that everyone here thought they were a perfect couple, and they never did anything to make us think differently. That's why it was so shocking."
Hannah leaned a little closer, and then she realized that Michelle and Norman were also leaning forward toward Sally. It was as if their action would cause Sally to hurry and tell them. But instead of continuing, Sally reached for the coffee carafe and filled everyone's cup.
"Sally could give Lisa a run for her money," Hannah thought. "She's got all three of us on pins and needles, waiting to hear what she's about to tell us." "Pinky decided she wanted the Maine lobster with drawn butter that night, and PK ordered my tenderloin tips with wild mushrooms. When their entrees came, Pinky took only one bite of her lobster, put down her fork, and started to argue with PK."
"Was it a bad argument?" Michelle asked.
"I'll say. It went on for at least 10 minutes, and that's a long time to fight, especially in a public place with people listening. And my lovely Maine lobster sat there getting as cold as icicles. The drawn butter had already started to congeal before they were through arguing."
"Do you know who started the argument?" Hannah asked, in an effort to bring Sally back to the subject of the argument itself.
"Pinky did. PK was about to take his first bite of tenderloin when she began to accuse him of all sorts of things."
"What things?" Norman asked.
"Everything under the sun," Sally said. "She started by accusing PK of not really loving her,
And then she told him all the things he did wrong.
Like what? Michelle asked.
She said he was mean to her. He never remembered to call her from work. He couldn't possibly be too busy to take a second to tell her he loved her. And on and on and on. She became positively unhinged. And it all ended badly. Very badly.
Sally stopped, drew a deep breath, and then she went on.
We've had some squabbles in here, but this one was legendary. I've never seen anyone carry on the way Pinky did. PK tried to calm her down, but their fight got louder and louder.
PK got loud? Michelle sounded surprised, and Hannah knew why. PK had been very soft-spoken, and they'd never heard him say a harsh word about anyone.
Not him, her. PK never raised his voice, not even when she got totally ridiculous. Pinky was the one who started yelling and screaming at him. Would you like my opinion on this?
Yes, please, Hannah said quickly.
All right. I think Pinky was just trying to start a big public fight with him, and she got madder and madder when he stayed calm and refused to fight with her.
Did PK attempt to answer her accusations? Norman asked.
Yes, he did, and he did it in a nice, calm voice. But that seemed to infuriate her even more. She kept carping at him, and he kept trying to calm her down and reassure her. It seemed to go on forever, but eventually PK reached the end of his patience.
What did he do? Norman asked.
He said that if she was going to be like that and throw a tantrum in front of a whole room full of people, he didn't want to marry her.
Was PK really angry? Michelle asked her.
He didn't sound angry. He just sounded very definite, as if he'd just reached a logical conclusion. And then Pinky told him that was fine with her. She wouldn't marry him even if he was the last man on earth. And she yanked off that engagement ring that she was so proud of.
And did she give it to him? Michelle asked.
And how? She threw it at PK so hard it bounced off the water glass and ended up two tables away. And then she stomped out of the dining room, out to the parking lot, and drove away.
That's awful. Michelle looked shocked and upset. What did PK do?
He got up from the table, apologized to everyone here for her behavior, collected his engagement ring from the lady who held it out to him, and stopped at the desk to pay his bill, and then he left.
But how did he get back to KCOW to pick up his car? Michelle asked.
Sally shrugged. I don't know. I guess he called a taxi.
I have to ask you a hard question, Sally. Hannah addressed her directly. Do you think that Pinky was deranged enough to kill PK?
Sally thought about that for a long moment, and then she sighed. I just don't know, Hannah. I thought about that. The argument was quite a while before PK died, but I guess it's possible that Pinky could have held a grudge against him that long. I know people do. And it could have kept building and building inside her until finally she was driven to take action.
Almond custard pie with raspberry jam glaze. Preheat oven to 350 degrees Fahrenheit, rack in the middle position. The crust. 1.5 cups of crushed soda or Ritz crackers. Measure after crushing. 6 tablespoons, 3/4 stick, salted butter, melted. 1/3 cup brown sugar. Pack it down when you measure it. The almond custard. 3/4 cup whole milk. 1 cup heavy cream. That's whipping cream. 2/3 cup smooth almond butter. I used Jif. 1/4 cup white granulated sugar. 1/4 cup brown sugar. Pack it down when you measure it. 4 large eggs. Sweetened whipped cream to garnish pie slices. Chopped blanched almonds to garnish, or fresh raspberries. You will use a 9-inch pie plate for this recipe.
Mix the cracker crumbs, butter, and brown sugar thoroughly. Press into bottom and sides of a 9-inch pie plate. Bake at 350 degrees Fahrenheit for 10 minutes or until lightly toasted. Then remove it from the oven, but don't turn off the oven. Let the crust cool on a wire rack or a cold burner while you make the filling. Combine the milk and cream in a medium saucepan and bring it to a simmer. Add the almond butter and allow it to sit for a minute. Then whisk it smooth. In the bowl of an electric mixer, mix the white sugar, brown sugar, and eggs until the mixture is fluffy and light yellow. This will form part of your custard mixture. With the mixer running on low, add the hot milk mixture slowly to your bowl, mixing all the while. Hannah's first note. If you add the hot milk mixture too fast, it may cook the eggs. Set the pie crust on a drip pan, that's any larger pan with sides. Pour only half of the custard mixture into the crust. You will add the second half of the custard mixture once your pie is on the oven shelf. Hannah's second note, the unbaked pie may be difficult to carry to the oven without spilling it. If you pour half of the custard into the pie shell first, pull out the oven rack just a bit, stick in the pie and drip pan, and then fill the pie with the rest of the custard mixture and carefully push in the oven rack. The custard mixture won't spill on the way to the oven. Bake your pie at 350 degrees Fahrenheit for 30 minutes. Test your pie while it's still in the oven by inserting the blade of a table knife 1 inch from the center. You may have to pull out the rack a bit to do this. Pull out the knife, and if there is still milky liquid clinging to the blade, your pie needs at least 5 minutes more in the oven. After the 5 minutes are up, test your pie with a clean table knife again. Repeat as often as necessary until the blade of the knife comes out clean. When your pie has set, remove it from the oven and place it on a cold stove burner or a wire rack for 15 minutes. Don't forget to shut off the oven. When the time is up, refrigerate your pie until it is completely cold. You can tell by feeling the bottom of the pie pan. If it's still warm, your pie hasn't been refrigerated long enough. When your almond custard pie has thoroughly chilled, make the raspberry jam glaze and pour it over the top of your pie. Then refrigerate it. When the pie and glaze are completely chilled, slice the pie. Garnish each slice with a dollop of sweetened whipped cream and a sprinkling of chopped almonds or fresh raspberries if you desire. Raspberry jam glaze recipe follows. Yield. This pie is very rich and delicious. I usually cut it into 8 pieces and serve it with plenty of strong, hot coffee. Raspberry jam glaze. 1 cup seedless raspberry jam. 1/2 teaspoon dry, unflavored gelatin. I used Knox. 1/4 cup cold water. Hannah's first note. The original glaze was made with jelly, not jam. Jelly does not have pieces of fruit in it. I've modified it so that you can use either jam or jelly, which gives you a wider choice of flavors. Measure out 1 cup of seedless raspberry jam and place it in the bowl of a food processor. Process the jam with the steel blade until it is smooth and completely pureed. Put the water in a small bowl and sprinkle the dry, unflavored gelatin over the cold water. Let it stand for 1 minute. Stir and let stand another 10 minutes. This will allow it to bloom. Hannah's note. When gelatin blooms, it means that soaking the gelatin in liquid will cause it to become tender and dissolve more readily. Both sheet gelatin and dry gelatin granules will usually bloom in any liquid. Mix the gelatin and water mixture with the pureed raspberry jam in a small saucepan. Cook the mixture over medium heat until it bubbles, stirring the mixture constantly with a wooden spoon or a heat-resistant rubber spatula. Pour the raspberry jam glaze over the cooled almond custard pie and refrigerate it until the glaze has set. Chapter 21. Sally paused at the open door to the convention floor so that all three of them could drink in the scene. Then she turned back to them.
"Do you like it?"
"It's stunning," Hannah told her, gazing at the giant Christmas tree in the center of the food court. Round tables with red and green tablecloths were set up on the length of the center space, and there was a white picket fence, decorated with colored Christmas lights, defining the rectangle that was designated as the food court. Statues of reindeer and elves were placed along the inside of the fence, and there was a golden throne at one end with a sign announcing the hours that Santa Claus would be there.
"Very impressive," Norman said, walking over to examine one of the statues. "Where did you get these, Sally? I'd like to get a couple to decorate my front lawn for Christmas."
"They're from a place called Christmas Joy. It's located in Avon, and they delivered the statues and set them up for me. Take a look at their website. I'll give you the address before you leave. The statues are sturdy, and they're indoor-outdoor, and they're okay up to 30 below. I thought I'd put a few of them outside when the convention's over."
"I love the throne," Michelle said. "Who's playing Santa this year?"
"Gene Hickman from Jordan High. He's been playing Santa out here for the past 2 years, and all the kids love him." She motioned them forward. "Come with me, and I'll show you your booth."
Hannah was amazed when she saw their booth. The cookie jar was spelled out in letters made of linked candy canes, and the outside was decorated with garlands and lights. The inside was lined with counters and shelves, and two giant coffee pots sat close to the front service window, but not so close that someone could touch them and burn themselves. There were brightly colored cardboard cutouts of Christmas trees, holly, snowflakes, reindeer, and Christmas stars tacked on the walls, and a giant wreath with red and green bells hung in the center above the service window.
"It's beautiful, Sally," Hannah smiled happily. "I might just move in here and forget about going back to the cookie jar."
"Brooke and Lauren decorated it. They helped to set everything up yesterday."
A man waved from the doorway, and Sally motioned him in.
"Come over and meet your new neighbors, Gary," she called out to him.
The man hurried over to Sally with a friendly smile on his face.
"These two ladies are the Swenson sisters, Hannah and Michelle, and this is Norman Rhodes. They're manning the cookie jar booth." She turned back to Gary. "And this is Gary Fowler. He's taking care of his sister's booth, and it's the one on your right."
"Hello, Gary," Hannah greeted him. While Norman and Michelle did the same, she turned to look at Gary's booth. It was filled with Christmas decorations of every type conceivable.
"You have a lot of product," she said. "My sister has a lot of product," he corrected her. "She's in the hospital and couldn't be here, so I volunteered to take over for her."
"That's nice of you," Michelle commented, walking over to look at a little toy rocking horse. "This is really cute."
"I think she told me that it was a replica of a Swedish horse, or maybe it was Norwegian. It's homemade."
"She made this?" Michelle was surprised. "It's really beautiful."
"She didn't make it," Gary told them. "My sister's selling the horses for the man who made them. That's what she does. She sells things on consignment that other people make."
"Are all the decorations homemade?" Norman asked him.
"Yes. She doesn't handle anything commercial."
"I'll be here helping Hannah and Michelle. When I take a break, I'll come to look at your decorations. I'm decorating for Christmas this year, and I don't have a thing."
"Drop by any time. I'll give you a discount if you buy more than 5 things. He turned to Sally.
"I'd like to stay and talk, but I'd better continue unpacking. I didn't get a chance to finish it today." He smiled at them.
"I'll see you all on Friday."
"Gary's my early bird," Sally said, leading them back to the door. "He's a really hard worker. He must have made 6 trips back to the cities to pick up more product. He told me he wants everything to be perfect for his sister. Remember when I told you that one of my vendors came in a week early, Hannah?"
"I remember."
"Well, that was Gary.
I'll introduce you to your neighbor on the other side when you get here on Friday morning. They're a bit flaky, but very, very nice. They own a small bookstore and card shop in Princeton, and they're selling all kinds of Christmas books and cards.
I wonder if they have any how-to books on homemade Christmas gifts, Michelle said.
I don't know, but that sounds like something they might carry, Sally replied. You'll have to check out their booth while you're here.
What time should we be here on Friday morning? Norman asked.
8 o'clock. That'll give you time to make the coffee and put out the cookie display before we open at 9. Sally stopped and looked slightly worried. That's not too early, is it?
Hannah and Michelle began to laugh, and Norman joined in.
What did I say? Sally asked them.
I usually get up at 4:30, Hannah told Sally, and Michelle gets up even earlier than I do.
Of course you do. Sally looked a bit embarrassed. I knew that. You mentioned it once, but I just forgot. I guess I did you a huge favor.
How so? Michelle asked her.
Coming out here at 8 will be a real vacation for you two.
Hannah was in the lead as the three of them climbed the outside staircase to her condo. The recipes Sally had given them were tucked in her purse, and she was careful not to dislodge them as she pulled out her keys to open the door.
"Who wants to catch Moisha?" she asked.
"I will," Norman volunteered. "Michelle is carrying the rest of the pie that Sally gave us for Lonnie."
"For Lonnie and Mike," Michelle corrected him. "You're forgetting that when food is involved, Mike just seems to materialize out of thin air."
Norman chuckled. "You're right. I forgot all about Mike's food dar. They'll arrive together."
Hannah stepped up to the door with the keys in her hand and turned around to Norman. "Are you ready?"
"I'm ready,"
Norman said, bracing himself for the 23-pound onslaught that was about to land in his arms. Hannah unlocked the door and pushed it open. But there was no furry missile, no sound of a frantic rush down the hallway from the bedroom, and no Moisha at all, even though they stood there for several long moments and waited for him to appear.
"Uh-oh," Hannah said, beginning to worry. "I hope nothing's wrong."
"He's probably sleeping," Michelle told her. "It's like Great-Grandma Elsa used to say, 'Don't borrow trouble or it'll find a home with you.'"
"Right," Hannah agreed, leading the way inside. Everything looked perfectly normal in the living room. The RoboVac was parked in its corner the way it always was. The dining room window was closed and locked, and the dim light in the laundry room was on the way she always left it.
"I'll check the bedrooms," Michelle offered, walking down the carpeted hallway.
"How do you like our wedding present?" Norman asked her, pointing toward the RoboVac.
"I love it. I haven't had to vacuum since you and Mike gave it to me, and there's no cat hair on the carpet, even though Moisha is shedding."
A moment later, Michelle came back, followed by Moisha. He jumped up on the couch and purred. His eyes were still half-lidded with sleep, and Hannah thought he looked a bit embarrassed that they'd caught him taking a nap.
"I'll get you a treat," Hannah told him, rubbing the area below his ears in a way that he seemed to particularly like. "Moisha was out like a light," Michelle said when Hannah came back to the living room with the fish-shaped, salmon-flavored kitty treats that he loved.
"I suspected that," Hannah said as she placed 4 treats on the back of the couch. "Moisha's been sleeping a lot lately. I really should call Sue at the vet's office tomorrow. She can ask Bob if that's a warning sign of something and call me back."
"Good idea," Norman told her. "Even better, why don't I pick up Moisha tomorrow morning and take him in for a checkup? Then I'll bring him over to visit Cuddles at my place for a while and take him back home later. You'll feel much better if Dr. Bob calls to say that everything is normal."
Hannah took a moment to consider that. It was true that she'd feel relieved if she found out that there was nothing wrong with her pet.
"If you're sure you don't mind, I'd really appreciate that," she told him.
Just then there was a knock on the door, 3 staccato raps in an authoritarian summons that demanded entry.
"It's Mike," Hannah said.
"Told you,"
Michelle informed Norman. "Hannah taught me how to recognize his knock."
Me too, Norman said with a grin, and then he turned to Hannah. Better go let him in before he teams up with Lonnie and they start practicing how to break down a door.
Hannah laughed and opened the door. Mike stepped in, followed by Lonnie, and assumed a stern look as he faced Norman.
We heard that, he said, and we don't need any practice. We know how to break down a door.
Sorry, Norman apologized. I was just kidding.
So am I.
Mike grinned to show that he hadn't taken offense.
Actually, we've never had occasion to break down a door, and Hannah's door is pretty solid. I checked it out the first time I came here.
He turned to Hannah.
Good for you, Hannah. You looked through the peephole.
Michelle and Lonnie greeted each other, and then Michelle turned to Mike. Do you two have time to eat a piece of Sally's almond custard pie with raspberry glaze?
That sounds interesting, Mike responded. Sure, we have time. We're off work unless we get a call. We're always on call when we're working on a murder investigation.
Michelle and Lonnie began talking, and Hannah turned to Mike. I don't suppose you had a chance to call your friend about the money yet?
Yes, I did. He checked out the serial numbers, and they're still in circulation. That means they're not reported as stolen. And he thinks it's really doubtful that they're counterfeit.
I'll put on the coffee and get the pie, Michelle said to Hannah. And then she turned to Lonnie. Why don't you help me in the kitchen, Lonnie?
Very sneaky, Hannah thought. Her sister had found a perfect way to get Lonnie away from Mike, so that she could ask him questions about their investigation. Norman exchanged glances with Hannah, and Hannah knew he'd figured out exactly what Michelle was doing.
She's probably going to pump Lonnie about our investigation, Mike commented, sitting down at Hannah's dining room table. I warned him about that.
Well, so much for being sneaky, Hannah thought, chuckling inwardly. Michelle should have known that Mike would catch on. Because Mike knew exactly what was going on, Hannah decided to take the bull by the horns. She motioned Norman to a chair and addressed Mike. Speaking of investigations, how are you coming along?
Things are proceeding normally, Mike said, narrowing his eyes at her. And how are you doing?
I've developed a suspect list in view of their motives.
Good for you. Who's on it?
Scotty McDonald, for one. Mike didn't look at all surprised.
Okay, what's his motive?
Jealousy. He wanted the job as head cameraman.
That's all?
No. He got over that when he found out that PK wasn't trying for the job, but Scotty always wanted the office that they gave to Ross. He understood when Ross got it, but he hated seeing PK take it over while Ross was gone. Mike smiled.
Good for you. I assume you went out to the Lake Eden Inn and talked to Dick at the bar?
Yes. We were there tonight. Norman took us out to dinner, and we all stopped at the bar to ask Dick about Scotty. Mike turned to Norman.
Did you know that Hannah was going to ask Dick about Scotty?
When Norman nodded, Mike faced Hannah again.
So, Norman, is your Lonnie on this case?
Hannah laughed. I guess you could say that. And Michelle's helping me, too.
And you're pretending to be me, the law enforcement authority and lead investigator?
Hannah was taken aback slightly. When Mike was investigating a murder, it was more difficult to read his intent. And perhaps that was what made him such a good interrogator. Her great-grandmother's phrase popped into her mind, "You can catch more flies with honey than you can with vinegar." She smiled at Mike. Sorry, Mike. I didn't mean to step on your toes.
You didn't. I just wanted to give you a hard time before I told you anything. I figure you'll appreciate it more now.
Hannah bristled. That was... She paused as she recalled the phrase she'd remembered and decided to change what she'd originally intended to say. That's understandable, I guess. It's just that I'm emotionally involved in this case. Not only was PK my friend, but if Ross were going to contact anyone at KCOW, it would have been PK.
I know P.K. would have told me if he'd heard from Ross, and now P.K. is gone.
Hannah felt tears come to her eyes, and she blinked them away.
It's a little like I lost my last link with Ross.
I'm sorry, Hannah. Mike reached out to pat her hand. I didn't think of it that way. I've had people accuse me of not being empathetic enough, and maybe they're right.
It's okay,
Hannah told him, wondering if she'd gone a bit overboard. She'd told Mike the truth, but she didn't want to be the type of person who played on someone's sympathy.
Anyway, Mike continued, Lonnie and I spent the day driving to all the candy company's retail outlets in a 50-mile radius. They don't keep the names of their customers, but they do have a code for the type of boxed candy that PK ate. We found some hits, but if the customer pays cash, the store isn't required to keep a record of the name.
Norman looked sympathetic. So you didn't find anything useful?
Nope, not a thing. We worked all day on a wild goose chase, and we still don't have any idea who purchased that candy and when it was sent.
This case is incredibly frustrating, Hannah stated the obvious. We've got the method and the time of death, but we can't alibi anyone the way we usually can by knowing where a suspect was when the victim was killed. Mike looked a bit surprised.
That's exactly right, Hannah. There's no sure way to clear anyone.
So what can we do? Norman asked him.
We have to just keep at it until we get a break. Either someone says something to incriminate himself or points us to someone else. Sooner or later, something's going to lead us to the killer.
We can do that, Hannah promised. Can you take time to relax with a beer, Mike? I've got some in the refrigerator.
Mike nodded.
Just one, though. And I'd better follow it with coffee. Lonnie and I are on call.
I'll ask Michelle to get it, Hannah said, getting up from the couch and walking to the kitchen doorway. Their backs were to her, and they couldn't see that she hadn't stepped into the kitchen yet.
Is she holding up okay?
Hannah heard Mike ask Norman.
She's okay, Norman responded. To tell the truth, Mike, I don't know how she does it. I was a wreck when I was in Seattle and Bev left me. Was I too hard on her? Mike asked, and Hannah thought he sounded a bit contrite.
No, she was baiting you a little.
And I took the bait, Mike admitted. But I was serious, Norman. Is she really okay?
I think so. There's a harder edge to Hannah lately, and I think it's because she doesn't dare let her emotions show. She's got to be devastated about Ross.
Yeah, you're right. So help me, Norman, if I ever find that guy and he doesn't have a good reason for leaving the way he did, I'm going to beat him to a pulp.
Not without me or not, Norman said. After what he did to Hannah, I dream about using him as a punching bag. Hannah stepped into the kitchen. She really didn't want to overhear any more. On one hand, it made her feel special and loved to have two men ready to defend her. On the other hand, she loved Ross and didn't want to listen to anyone talk about causing him harm. Michelle and Lonnie were standing by the coffee pot talking, and she gave them a little wave before she opened the refrigerator. The beer was on the bottom shelf, and she grabbed a bottle. She retrieved the magnetic opener that was stuck to the side of the refrigerator, opened the bottle, and replaced the tool that the boys in her class had called a church key, wondered about that for a split second, and went back into the living room.
Thanks, Mike said, taking the beer when she handed it to him.
Look, Hannah, I guess I was a little hard-nosed tonight. That's because I'm not getting anywhere with this case. Will you please tell me if you get any kind of a break?
Of course I will, Hannah promised. Maybe it'll help if we go at this investigation from different directions and contribute any leads we get. Something we discover might fit with something you discover and add up to a clue.
Mike nodded.
It could help, he agreed. The ball's in your court, Hannah. I still don't have any idea who put the drugs in that candy.
Neither do we, but I do have a couple of suspects. Let me get my list, and you can tell me if you investigated them already.
A few minutes later, Michelle and Lonnie emerged from the kitchen with pie and coffee. Michelle looked surprised when she saw Mike reading Hannah's suspect list.
"What's going on?" she asked.
"Since we're not getting anywhere with our investigation, and Mike and Lonnie aren't getting anywhere either, we decided to try sharing information. We're hoping that something that we discover and something that Mike and Lonnie discover will combine into an actual clue to the killer's identity."
"You're sharing our information with them?"
Michelle was clearly shocked.
"That's right."
"Well, this is a first," Lonnie exclaimed, looking as shocked as Michelle did. "Mike and I have never really worked with you before."
"Sometimes it takes a radical move to get results," Mike told him. "This case is so complicated, it just might take all five of us to solve it."
Chapter 22
Hannah and Michelle dabbed at their eyes when the funeral service ended.
"No wonder he went by PK," Hannah said to Michelle.
Michelle dabbed at her eyes again, and then she managed a smile.
"He told me he didn't want to be called a cross between a steak and a vacuum cleaner."
Hannah smiled back, even though she still felt like crying. They'd gone out to Hannah's cookie truck to compose themselves after the formal service was over. The burial at the graveside was private, attended only by PK's parents and his aunt and uncle.
"Ready?"
Hannah asked Michelle.
"Ready,"
Michelle responded.
"We'd better go in and find Mother and Doc."
Hannah retrieved the platter of cookies they'd baked for the funeral buffet. It was always held after the formal church service, and it was a tradition in Lake Eden. Usually it was held in the church basement, which was equipped with a kitchen and a large reception area. Both sisters walked to the side door that led to the basement of St. Jude's. Michelle pushed it open, and they began to descend the stairs. The sound of subdued voices greeted them as they reached the bottom of the staircase and opened the inner door to the largest basement meeting room. It was the venue where church suppers and potluck fundraisers were held. The scents of coffee and mixed bouquet of casseroles, salads, breads, and desserts were compelling, and Hannah realized that she was hungry. She really didn't feel like going through the buffet line and eating at one of the long tables where she would be obligated to make polite and meaningless conversation with the other mourners.
"What's wrong?"
Michelle asked, noticing the frown on Hannah's face.
"I really don't want to stay long enough to eat," Hannah told her. "I'd rather find Mother and Doc and see if they need our help to get the information we need. Then I'd like to leave."
"I'm with you," Michelle said. "I'm hungry, but I don't want to socialize for very long either."
Hannah looked around at the crowd of people who had taken seats at the tables. "Everyone else must have come straight down here after the church service."
"There's Mother and Doc,"
Michelle gestured toward one of the tables. "It looks like they saved places for us."
"That's good. Most of the tables are already filled. Let's drop off these cookies and go sit with them."
They gave Doc and Dolores a wave to indicate that they had seen them. And then the two sisters headed straight for the kitchen in the rear to deliver the cookies they'd brought.
"Hello, girls,"
Father Coltus's longtime housekeeper, Imelda Grisa, greeted them.
"What did you bring?"
"Raisin almond crunch cookies," Hannah told her.
"Sounds great. I might just have to eat one or two as I put them out," Imelda said, smiling at them. "Thank you, girls. I'm sure everyone will enjoy the cookies."
Hannah and Michelle backed out of the kitchen as quickly as they could. The ladies were rushing around, and they didn't want to get in the way of the food preparation. They entered the meeting room again and dodged the women who were carrying platters, bowls, and covered casserole dishes to the table that had been moved to the front of the room to hold the after-service buffet.
"Hello, Mother," Hannah said, sitting down next to her.
"Hi, Doc," she greeted Doc Knight, who sat across from Dolores. "Hi, girls," Doc said to both of them. "Are you two all right?"
"Yes," Michelle answered for both of them. "Thank you for asking, Doc."
"Funerals are always a strain," Dolores said, looking properly solemn. "I thought Father Coltus gave a lovely eulogy, didn't you?"
"Very nice," Doc agreed.
but I wish he hadn't given PK's full name. No wonder he went by his initials.
He said that he didn't want to be known as a cross between a steak and a vacuum cleaner, Michelle told him. Dolores gave one sputter of startled giggles, but she composed herself again quickly.
I shouldn't have done that, she said. This is a grave occasion.
Both Hannah and Michelle began to shake with silent laughter, even though they tried to hold in their mirth and look serious.
What is the matter with you two girls? Dolores asked them.
They're trying to keep from laughing, Doc explained.
But why?
This is a grave occasion, Doc repeated. Please stop with the puns, Lori. You know they crack me up. I'm having enough trouble maintaining after the cross between steak and the vacuum cleaner.
I did say that, Dolores admitted. I just never thought that...
She paused and took a deep breath.
It was totally unintentional, but I'd better not say another word.
She slapped her hand over her mouth to show that she was serious, and there was a very determined look in her eyes. When she removed her hand, her lips were closed tightly. Hannah, Michelle, and Doc exchanged glances. They all knew that Dolores would never be able to hold her tongue for long. There was silence at their end of the table. No one spoke, including Dolores. Her promise of silence lasted for at least 20 seconds, 15 seconds more than Hannah had expected. Then Dolores turned to Hannah and opened her mouth.
When Edith gets here, I'll take you girls over to meet her, and we'll offer our condolences.
Do you have a plan to get the information we need? Hannah asked her.
Yes, and I'm almost certain it will work.
Do you want us to do anything to help you? Michelle asked.
Yes. Michelle, you should just stand there and look solemn.
But what should I do if PK's mother or father asks me a question?
Respond politely, of course. And Hannah, Dolores addressed her, I'll take the lead, but I'll need you to play along with my plan. You're exactly the right age for it.
What is your plan? Hannah asked.
We don't have time to go into it now. PK's parents are back. You'll catch on, I'm sure.
Everyone quieted as PK's parents, accompanied by his aunt and uncle, stepped into the meeting room. Father Coltus led them to the private table that had been reserved for the family, and two of the parishioners rushed over with coffee for them. Hannah noticed that PK's mother was shaking slightly, but she couldn't tell if it was from grief or from the exposure to the cold weather at the graveside. Hannah had attended enough local funerals to know that Digger Gibson, their local funeral director, always made sure that his driver delivered the family to a spot that was as close to the gravesite as possible. In the winter and in any other inclement weather, a long runner of all-weather carpeting was stretched down a shoveled walkway all the way to the graveside. Even though a canopy was always erected over the grave and surrounding area, the wind was blowing today, and heavy wet snow was falling. Although PK's family had been standing under the canopy, it would not have completely protected them from the elements.
"Let's go,"
Dolores said, once PK's parents and relatives had warmed themselves with the coffee.
"I want us to be first in the condolence line. Follow me, girls."
Hannah and Michelle stood up obediently and followed their mother past tables of people who were eating the funeral food. Hannah glanced at the buffet table as they walked by and spotted the cookies she'd brought. She didn't have to squelch the urge to reach out and take one, an urge she usually felt when she took sweets to a buffet. As a matter of fact, she wasn't even hungry any longer. Perhaps that was because she was anxious about responding incorrectly when her mother broached the subject of PK's high school and spoiling their chances of following that line of inquiry.
"Edith? Arnold?"
Dolores sounded very solemn.
"I know I've said this before, but I am so terribly sorry for your loss."
"Thank you," PK's mother responded. "It was so kind of you to come out to see us the day after we received the news. You have been a great comfort to us." "Mother's been a comfort?" Hannah's mind inquired incredulously. However did she pull that off? Hannah shut off the critical part of her mind and gave a polite smile. But perhaps smiling was not a polite thing to do at a funeral. She wiped the smile off her face and assumed a solemn expression again and did her best to concentrate on what Dolores was saying.
"This is my oldest girl, Hannah," Dolores gestured toward Hannah, "and this is my youngest, Michelle." She turned to them. "Girls, I'd like you to meet Edith Aylesworth, P.K.'s mother, and Arnold Aylesworth, P.K.'s father."
"I'm so sorry for your loss," Hannah said quickly.
"And I'm sorry, too," Michelle said. "P.K. made the commercials for the plays I'm directing. He was wonderfully talented."
"Thank you," P.K.'s mother said.
"I think Hannah went to high school with P.K.," Dolores told his mother, giving Hannah a look that said, "Pay attention. This is important."
It was her cue, and Hannah took it.
"He would have been a year behind me," she said. "I thought I knew everyone at Jordan High, but I don't remember P.K."
"No wonder, dear," P.K.'s mother said. "P.K. attended Clarissa High. We didn't move to Lake Eden until the year after he graduated."
"Bingo," Hannah's mind chimed in. "You got it."
Dolores cleared her throat.
"We really must go. People are starting to line up behind us, and I know they all want to offer their condolences. The next time you're free, please do drop by to see me. I'm in the penthouse at the old Albion Hotel. There's a lovely little garden under that dome on top. It's climate-controlled, and we can sit there in comfort and watch the snow fall."
She turned to Hannah and Michelle.
"Come along, girls. This is a very trying day for Edith and Arnold, and we mustn't take up any more of their time."
When they got back to their table, Hannah remained standing and motioned for Michelle to do the same. "We have to go, Mother. We have to get back to work. We have tons of baking to do."
"Of course, dears. But you didn't get anything to eat."
"We'll pick up something on the way," Hannah told her. "Don't worry about us, Mother, and thank you very much for the opening you gave me with P.K.'s parents."
"It worked, didn't it?"
Dolores said proudly. "It certainly did," Hannah agreed. "You're a real genius, Mother. I never would have thought to do that."
"You're wonderful at situations like that, Mother," Michelle complimented her. "Why, thank you, dears," Dolores said graciously, and then she turned to Doc. "Would you like to get in the buffet line, dear, or would you rather go somewhere else to eat?"
Since their mother was busy talking to Doc, Hannah nudged Michelle, gave a little wave to Dolores and Doc, and they made their escape.
"Did you mean what you said about going for something to eat?" Michelle asked as Hannah pulled out of the church parking lot.
"Yes, I thought we'd run out to the corner tavern for a hamburger.
And fries.
And maybe even onion rings.
And just so we don't feel that we're ignoring our vegetables, we could always order a small dinner salad," Michelle added.
"Only if we get our blue cheese dressing on the side," Hannah told her.
"So we can dip our fries and onion rings in the dressing?"
Hannah smiled.
"Exactly."
They rode a few miles in silence, and then Michelle spoke again.
"You have something you want to check out at the corner tavern, don't you?"
Hannah laughed. "I should have known I couldn't put anything past you." "Of course I do. That comment Sally made about Pinky just keeps running through my mind.
The one about how devastated Pinky was after the breakup, even though she deliberately caused it?"
"That's right."
"And you're wondering if Pinky could be carrying a grudge against P.K., a totally irrational grudge that could have somehow led to P.K.'s murder?"
"Exactly."
"But how will going out to the corner tavern help you find out?"
"I called this morning, and I found out that Georgina is working this afternoon."
"She works at the Red Velvet Lounge, too, doesn't she?"
"She does. And Georgina has a way of knowing everything about her customers."
"That's what you said about Carol out at KCOW.
"I know I did, but when Pinky went out there to pick up P.K., she was probably on her best behavior. And Georgina might have seen her at other times of the day, like nights or weekends when P.K. wasn't around. Everyone at KCOW seemed to think that Pinky was a very sweet person, and so did Sally and Dot, until the night she threw P.K.'s engagement ring at him and stormed out."
Michelle thought about that for a moment. "That's true, and it's worth checking out. The Corner Tavern is an after-event place.
People go out there late at night after they've seen a movie or gone to a sports event at Jordan High. It's the best place to go at night if you want a burger.
They have a fish burger, too, and I know there's a barbecued chicken burger. And remember that Pinky only took one bite